This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor's Office, Sharon Weston Broom, Mayor President of East Baton Rouge Parish, and our show originates from the Investar Tower in the capital city. Your number is 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is producing, and we start with Tyler Bridges on Politics Friday, and we welcome the audience of WWNO in New Orleans to also joining the show from a perspective that might be a bit different from those who listen every day on WRKF in Baton Rouge. But Tyler Bridges, twice a member of Pulitzer Prize-winning teams, has been covering Louisiana politics since 1989, when he was dispatched to cover the Capitol and ultimately covered some campaigns at the start that involved David Duke, 1990 for the Senate, 91 for governor, and he wrote two books about David Ernest Duke and also wrote about gambling in Louisiana like few others, which was a major issue at that time. And now we have a new sheriff in town. We have Jeffrey Martin Landry, who's replaced John Bell Edwards as governor, and Landry is not resting on his laurels of having won an election without a runoff. He is governing as though he has a mandate, and some would say he certainly does. And Tyler Bridges on this show last year, Jeff Landry said that he would govern the state the way the people want him to, and if electoral outcomes are any indicator, he is moving the state in an extremely conservative direction. How's it going at the Capitol right now?
Fine. And Jim, I've got to know, because you always introduced sort of awards that I've won, I've got to know that you are now a member of the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you. Soon. Soon and very soon. But thank you very much. I appreciate it, Tyler.
Yeah,
Tyler's been writing about all the people inducted. I'm in with quite a class of people and lots of characters. And my friend Lewis Unglesby said, where have all the characters gone? Well, there's some characters in that class for the Hall of Fame. And some would say, segueing back to our original topic, Jeffrey Martin Landry is a bit of a character.
Well, he certainly has an unusual background to become governor, and I pieced that together for a story I wrote for the Times-Picayune Advocate just before he took office. This is not a guy who graduated from college in 4 years and then went to law school and then began a political career. You know, his first job out of high school in St. Martinville is to work in a sugarcane field. And it's a guy who took a number of years to get through the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. But at a certain point, with his Cajun personality, friendliness, extroverted nature, and desire to help people, and personal ambition, he decided to get into politics. And obviously, it's worked out well for him so far.
Well, he is... been responsible for three sessions in a few months, and now there is talk that this session might end early and that lawmakers might convene for a constitutional convention. Now, there are some people already saying that you can't do this, that these people at a constitutional convention would have to be elected by the people. But nonetheless, there is a serious discussion about whether this will happen in the next few months.
Yeah, in fact, that's a topic I spoke this past week with the Senate President Cameron Henry and the House Speaker Philip DeVilliers. They're still trying to figure out the details simply of how it would be run. In 1992, thanks to good research passed along to me by Melinda DeLotte of the Public Affairs Research Council, we know that in 1992, the last time there was a constitutional convention, the House and Senate met as if they normally do, but each dealing with constitutional issues, and any bills passed by both of them then what became the change in the Constitution. But in 1992, the voters turned down the proposed changes. So right now you have senators who are complaining if you go into a unicameral body, which is one of the ideas, and that's what happened back in 1973. The senators don't like the idea that there would be more House members than senators. And meanwhile, the governor wants to have 27 delegates as well. And one of the problems is if you have the 144 members of the legislature plus 27 delegates from the governor's office, governor's picks, then there's not a place for them to meet in the Capitol. One idea is, again, going back to 1992, you have a House chamber, you have a Senate group, and you have a third group, and it can be tricameral. And then that doesn't even deal with the issue of what are the issues that they're going to try to get into the new constitution that would govern the state.
Well, this was not a major topic of conversation on the campaign trail, and neither was the closed primary. So Jeff Landry is governing from a conservative perspective, but he's doing things that some would say were unexpected, at least early in the game. But he is being bold and brassy right from the start. Does he take the risk of trying to push too many things in too quickly?
Oh, sure he does, Jim, and you make a great point. You know, I covered that campaign last year, and almost his entire focus was on crime. He did talk about education, wanting to improve education. But as you said, his move in the first special session to close the primaries for different kinds of elections, that was not something he talked about. And he barely talked about wanting to rewrite the state's constitution. And we're going to have to see in the coming weeks exactly what form that will take this year. But there is certainly the danger of leading ahead and getting too far ahead of the people. But I don't think that's his worry right now. I think the feeling of the conservatives is, hey, this is our chance. Let's not blow it. Let's make the deep-seated changes that we want to see in Louisiana, because for the first time, there's a Republican governor and a Republican supermajority in the legislature.
We're visiting with Tyler Bridges, who covers state politics, principally what happens at the legislature and on the campaign trail for the Advocate and the Picayune. If you'd like to join our conversation today, the number is 877-217-5757. There is an election tomorrow. It is a closed primary, but this is because it involves a presidential primary. So Democrats will vote for either Joe Biden or somebody else, and Republicans will vote for Donald Trump or somebody else. But there are some other elections on the ballot, and the projection is that we might actually get 25% of the people to vote. And unfortunately, Tyler, in an election like this, that's a good number. It is amazing how under-motivated we are when it comes to elections that are important.
Yeah, and I got to say, Jim, I just find it so distressing. You know, I wrote a book about my dad during World War II. The book is called The Flight, and he was a B-24 bomber pilot who was shot down trying to protect democracy in the world. And he served with guys who died. And so a lot of people in this country have died trying to win the vote or make sure that we have the vote. And think about what happened during the Civil Rights era, and that people these days don't bother to vote. They say, oh, they're too busy. I just cannot accept that. And also, I spent time as a reporter in South America, and I was in Chile when they had the military dictatorship. I was in Cuba under the leftist dictatorship under Castro. And boy, it's just so much better to be able to say what you want, what you think, and be able to vote. And it's just wish people would make the effort to get out there tomorrow. But, you know, it's a strange thing because of the closed primary. For example, I'm a no-party voter. I cannot vote in New Orleans tomorrow because I can't vote in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary. And there's also, I should mention, as you know, Jim, there are elections for the Democratic State Central Committee and the Republican State Central Committee as well.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana Friday politics number. Matthew in Slidell. Matthew, you're on with Tyler.
Hi, I had a comment about the possibility of a constitutional convention. And if we have one, can we have just fewer elected offices? I mean, does the coroner need to be elected? Does the clerk of court need to be elected? I mean, maybe people would be come out to vote more often if they didn't have so many things to vote on.
That's an interesting perspective, Matthew. I don't think you're going to get much traction on that, but it is an idea that sometimes I think you're right about people being overwhelmed. We do have a lot of elections in Louisiana, Tyler.
Yeah, and actually, as you know, Jim, there have been changes over the years to elect fewer people. For example, in New Orleans, they used to elect seven assessors. Now there's only one. Remember, there used to be an elections person elected statewide. That office has been eliminated for now a number of years. But what happens to the Constitutional Convention if this Republican legislature calls one? They can say, well, we should only focus on certain issues. But once the convention is called, the delegates are free to rewrite the Constitution in any way they want. And then ultimately, of course, if they whatever they put on the ballot, the public will have the final say on it. The Constitutional Convention is something that people really should pay attention to because it could make all sorts of changes in the things that we're allowed to do in this state.
877-217-5757. We will spend a few more minutes with Tyler Bridges, and then we're scheduled to segue to former state lawmaker Troy Hebert, who beat Jeff Landry in a close race for the Louisiana Senate in 2007, and Jan Moeller, former journalist who's now head of one of the major organizations in our state. We'll talk more after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Tyler Bridges, the fine reporter for The Advocate and The Picayune. He's written 5 books, I count, and all of them, in a way, involve his history in our state, although one is about his dad, The Flight, A Father's War, A Son's Search, and one is about his alma maters, Stanford University, losing to California in the craziest game ever in 1982, 5 laterals and a trombone. But he is now a true Louisianian, having spent most of his life here, and he's covered a lot of people since 1989, and 2 of them will be with us in short order, Troy Hebert and Jan Moeller. But the session, the third one, is ongoing. It's scheduled to go to June 3rd, and this is the busiest first few months any governor has had, I believe, and here we are on March 22nd, so we're not even 75 days into this governor's term. And Tyler, they say you got to strike while you got the honeymoon. Well, Jeff Landry is taking that to the ultimate level, is he not?
Right. As you mentioned, we're now in the third session this year. The first special session dealt with redistricting of the Supreme Court and the congressional delegation, which it's going to cost Garrett Graves a seat in Congress. And also they closed the primaries in certain races. And the second special session was dealt with crime, as we remember. And now the third one, the focus in the early days seems to be focusing on education, particularly the conservative plan for education savings accounts. But I see a report came out from the Public Affairs Research Council saying that this could be a huge drain on the state treasury. And Governor Landry seems to be taking the lead on insurance from the insurance commissioner, Tim Temple, who wants a more free market approach to insurance in this state. But then, as we've already discussed, there is the looming issue of the potential constitutional convention being called by this legislature.
Mm-hmm. Sally in Baton Rouge has already corrected me. This is day number 77 of Jeff Landry's tenure. But you have to say he's been a busy bee for his 76 days, and that counts his first day, which he was inaugurated, and presumably he was busy getting celebratory greetings and just getting situated, but he's been busy, and I don't think it's a surprise, but some of the moves have been a bit surprising. Is there anything in the next few months that could be a stunner, Tyler, that you're aware of?
Well, I think he outlined what he wants to try to do in his State of the State speech to open the regular session. That was a speech that was pretty general, I will note. But of course, you never know what could come up, and there could be something they're trying to do that they don't want to tell the public yet. The bill filing deadline for the legislature is April 2nd, so there's still a number of days for something to appear that we don't yet know about.
HB in Denham Springs, briefly, you're on with Tyler. Go for it, HB.
Good morning. Mr. Tyler, in our 24-hour news cycle, whether the elections be state, local, or national level, we hear so many things that are pro and con about the candidates and their background and so forth. My question is this. Hearing so many different things about so many people running for office, do we as a public ever know the total truth about who we're really voting for and where they stand?
Do we get a full glimpse of the candidates? You profiled all the gubernatorial candidates, all the major ones, and some things are just considered bad taste to report, but some people would rather have everything on the table. But Tyler, personal matters involving family members, you got to draw the line somewhere. Is there a case in which we're either going too far or not far enough in coverage of candidates?
Well, I am a believer in trying to get out as much information as I can, and me and my colleagues, and I think that's, you know, a principal role that we try to play as journalists. Certainly, there's a lot of different sources of news out there. My concern these days is that people, I think, on the far left only look at certain sites, and people on the far right look at certain very different sites. And I think there's something lost when we don't have sort of a common ground. And I really believe that's something like a newspaper like mine, the Times-Picayune and the Advocate does. We're not in our news coverage trying to favor one or the other. We're simply trying to report on what public officials are doing. And I mm-hmm. really believe that people would benefit, and democracy benefits, if more people read the mainstream newspaper. And sure, go if they want to get more information online, they can certainly do that as well.
And with artificial intelligence today, we could be faked out. And I would imagine that if, say, the Donald Trump Access Hollywood tape became public today, we're 8 years removed from 2016, there would be a number of people saying that it was altered, that that's not really Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, it's very concerning about democracy when you've got that when things like that, because there's already enough disinformation out there as it is. And again, I believe that the work that we at The Advocate, the Times-Picayune do, we're really trying to get the information out the best way we can. We're trying to follow the truth the best way we can and let readers know about the important information that their elected officials are doing.
Okay, 877-217-5757. We will take one call and one email. Robin has pointed me to this email from Hal in Monroe. It's a story you wrote a few days ago, March 19th, about John Wehmer, the Supreme Court Justice. 2 years ago, a federal judge lifted a legal hold that blocked him from seeking re-election. You wrote a story about how this intersects with Governor Landry when he was Attorney General. What's going on with this?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, in the first special session, the governor tried to redistrict the Louisiana Supreme Court. You know, the seven court members are elected, unlike the U.S. Supreme Court, who are appointed by the president. But Chief Justice Wehmer wanted to run for re-election in 2022, but the then Attorney General Jeff Landry worked with the NAACP, an unlikely bedfellow, to get a federal judge to prevent that election from going forward. So supporters of Judge Wehmer had to go to the federal judge and file a lawsuit to force the judge to lift that stay on the election to be able to allow the Chief Justice to run for re-election. And one issue was he went to court then to try to get, or his supporters to get their legal fees paid for. I think it was about $40,000, and the judge ruled in their favor. So the taxpayers are going to have to pay that $40,000 from what then Attorney General Landry was trying to block that. But that is one of the issues before the legislature again, mm-hmm. is to redistrict the Supreme Court. Governor Landry is supporting creating a second black majority seat on the Louisiana Supreme Court. There are three maps in the state Senate right now, and the Senate is going to take them up on Tuesday. And so that's also an important issue going forward this legislative session.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with Tyler Bridges.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Jim, and hello, Tyler. I don't think enough coverage is being made on this, I think, a great threat to public education in the state. Looking at an advocate article from yesterday, there's something they're proposing, an education savings account, stipends ranging from $5,000 to $15,000 per year to pay for private school or tutoring or other forms of alternate so-called education.
All right. Tyler, that's another area where the governor is extremely active, and it seems he's got the mojo at the Capitol to make it happen, but some, especially those who are advocates of public education, believe it's a bridge too far.
Yeah, we've seen this conservative playbook in other states with Republican governors. The mantra is let the money follow the student, and so that the families are feeling like they're spending tax dollars on property taxes and not getting money because their child is in public school. I mean, is in a private school. But this could be a huge budget buster. And again, I'll make the point, we now have an education team of three people who are closely following this issue and other education issues. And so just as James was reading the story in The Advocate, that's something my colleagues will be following this session.
Thank you, Tyler Bridges. Back with Jan Moeller and Troy Hebert after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF and WWNO because it is Friday politics, and there is much in the political realm to discuss, and we have two seasoned people in Louisiana to give us their perception of what's happening. Troy Hebert, the former state lawmaker, and he, of course, knows Jeff Landry well. He beat him in 2007 in a close race for the Louisiana Senate. Landry, of course, rebounded nicely and ended up becoming a congressman, then attorney general, and now governor of our state. And Troy Hebert remains friendly with his former adversary. He's also friendly with a guy who used to cover him at the state capitol for the Picayune, Jan Moeller, who has been head of the Louisiana Budget Project for how many years now?
For 12 years, and we have changed our name, Jim. We are now known as Invest in Louisiana.
Invest in Louisiana, which is a name, and stories that have been permeating all media over the last few days, Louisiana's losing people. So we need to invest in something to get more people here, because ultimately, if you don't grow your populace, you don't grow very much, and you don't grow relative to other states. And look what's happened all around us with Texas and Florida and Georgia, North Carolina, even South Carolina exploding with growth, and we've stayed relatively the same.
We have a lot of problems in Louisiana, but that's probably the overriding issue. People are voting with their feet, and I think one of the reasons we work for policy change at the legislature is to try to promote the policies that we think would hopefully convince people to stay, and we think that has to do with investing in the people and communities we have here in Louisiana.
The executive director now of Invest in Louisiana, Jan Moeller, and Troy Hebert. Now, Troy, many who have called this show over the last several years have said that the conservative politics in Louisiana might be a detriment to attracting more people, but we have accepted the Medicaid expansion in those states I just mentioned, Texas and Florida and Georgia. South Carolina, that they haven't accepted Medicaid expansion, and they seem to be doing better than us. Does the tenor of politics affect whether or not people come or go in a state? What are your thoughts, Troy Hebert?
Well, first, good morning to you and Jan and all your listeners. I mean, it certainly depends on your political philosophy. I think overall, I see you blue states like California and New York, there's a mass exodus. And more of your red states seem to be growing population. I don't know if that means that there's just the conservatives that live in those other states are moving. But Louisiana's pretty unique because, you know, you take it from a guy who used to be a blue dog Democrat most of my political career. We just didn't have a political ideology based on party. We just had it based on the way our grandma and grandpa and mom and daddy raised us. And where we were conservative, we were pro-guns, we were pro-flag, we were pro-military and things like that, but we were mostly Democrats. And today you have the political world where everything is by party, which I think is a huge mistake because I got a bunch of Republicans that are very liberal and a bunch of Democrats that are very conservative. I think what's happening now, though, you know, is people are voting filing their pocketbook. I'm sorry, and they got to go where they can find good jobs. And when we lose our youth to other states that provide these young families with good paying jobs, that's where they're going.
Okay, 877-217-5757. Now, cold weather places like New York have been losing population, and that's true of the Eastern Seaboard for most of those states, but the Sun Belt has not, and California up until recently has not, and even though California over the last few years has lost some people, they still have 52 people representing them in the U.S. House of Representatives, and Louisiana has 6. So California still has almost 40 million people, but Texas now has almost 30. Now, here's a perspective of what's going on in Louisiana from Will Sutton of The Advocate in a column of a few days ago. He says, as I watched the Louisiana legislature's two special sessions, the first on redistricting, the second on crime, I grew increasingly concerned about what lawmakers might approve during the regular session. In addition to redistricting, the first special session saw Republicans push a bill to scratch the state's open primary election system in favor of closed party primaries. A watered-down version passed, and a renewed effort to impose closed primaries is pending. The second session saw Republicans play to their base by adopting a slew of tough-on-crime laws, despite a significant drop in crime last year, particularly in New Orleans. And he continues, the rightward turn with bills to get public sector unions, reduce worker compensation benefits, and even cut meal breaks for young workers and overall employee safety goes on. And the goal is clear, give businesses more flexibility and fewer restrictions to encourage them to locate or expand in Louisiana. And he even compares this to Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. But what do you make of the overall philosophy, Jan? We'll start with you on this. Is this a strategy that might work to get more people to Louisiana, as oppressive and sinister as some people might find it?
Well, time will tell, won't it? I think from our perspective, there are some just terrible legislation moving through the process right now, dealing with the right of workers to organize, dealing with access to public benefits. And really, we've in Louisiana have tilted the playing field towards business and industry for 50 years. So this is a continuation of something that we've been doing in Louisiana for a long time, and we keep expecting different results. And so I think from our perspective, and we can talk about individual mm-hmm. policy choices, but Louisiana needs to do a better job of taking care of its workers. The minimum wage hasn't gone up at the federal level since July 1st of 2009, almost 15 years. If that wage had kept up with inflation, it would be $10.40 today. So if you're making less than $10.40 an hour at your job, you are being paid less than the lowest paid worker in America was getting paid at the bottom of the Great Recession. So we are not doing a good job of making sure, not just we are creating jobs, but we're not creating jobs that pay a living wage and that provide a decent standard of living. And I think that's a huge reason why workers are choosing to go where not only are there jobs, but jobs that pay better, offer more opportunity and a way forward. Everybody wants to take care of themselves and their families, and there are just far too many people who don't see that opportunity in Louisiana.
I'm going to quote Jan and something he tweeted a few days ago. He says, the House Ways and Means Committee is hearing a bill that would cut taxes on oil producers by $107 million over the next 5 years. That's money that could go to health care, education, and other considerations. Now, Troy Hebert, it's the age-old dilemma to stimulate industry. We need to feed the beast there and to feed our poor people and make them productive and build a better society. Money has to be expended there. When you have to make a choice, does your party affiliation often determine what that choice is?
Well, a lot of times it does today. But I can tell you this, as somebody who served there for 25 years and I got a strong reputation of being somebody who fought for the little man, I'm all for the little man. But I can tell you, the little man also shares a dream of wanting to be the big man one day. And you can't get the little man to rise and buy a house and a nice car and feed his family if he don't have a good job. And so if you can't have a good job, if you don't have a good solid industry, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, guys. I mean, just again, look next door in Texas and Florida and the states you mentioned, Jim. I mean, they have policies that we're trying to implement now. For example, no income tax. And I think that those are the things that we, a roadmap that we can follow. But there's two other components, I think, that have to be crucial. If we don't have a good education system, and if we have crime in the streets, people aren't coming even if there is a good job. So this is not an easy approach. I think Juan pointed out, I mean, it's just not something we've been working on for a long time. But, you know, it's not just a fix-all deal that you're going to fix in a couple of sessions.
Jan?
Well, let's talk about the income tax, and let's talk about taxes in general. You know, Louisiana, like every state, has to have a balanced budget every single year. If you want to spend a dollar to educate somebody, to provide health care, to build a road, you have to raise that dollar through taxes. Federal government doesn't have that problem. They can put everything on the credit card, so they can cut taxes and increase spending. And what Jeff Landry is doing right now is creating a major math problem a couple of years down the road. Tyler talked about education savings account, which is going to be a huge new entitlement program for the upper and middle class, costing over $500 million a year in new spending. We're cutting taxes on oil producers. There's going to be proposals next year to cut taxes on income. We're going to raise the cost of the criminal justice system with these criminal justice bills that passed earlier on. You can't, if you're going to keep raising spending and cutting taxes, you're going to go back to those budget shortfalls that I, in my opinion, wrecked Louisiana during the previous decade and wrecked the career of the previous Republican governor. So my word of caution to the folks who are speeding down this path would be take a deep breath and think about how you're going to balance that budget and provide for the needs of the state 4, 5, 6 years down the road, because the math ain't mathing right now.
All right. Colin in Baton Rouge, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. You know, your guest mentioned the little guy, and I just wanted to say that the little guy is the every guy, and we no longer aspire to be the big boss man. We aspire to pay our mortgage, to send our kids to a good school, to have a little savings so we don't die destitute. And right now what Louisiana is doing is sending all of our tax dollars to corporations that don't need the money. They don't need the money. We need the tax dollars. We need to invest in a good society. And honestly, guys, I'm planning my exodus from Louisiana. You know, I'm 36 and can't afford a home. Maybe we put subsidies into home ownership here, because that's why people are going to North Carolina and Texas at some point, because it was affordable to buy a home. And I don't know. I'm just saying that we don't need big industry here. You know, ExxonMobil is not going to pick up their boots and walk away.
877-217-5757 is your number. Another quarter hour to go with Jan Moeller and Troy Hebert on Talk Louisiana. This is Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge and WWNO 89.9 in New Orleans. And if you'd like to get in before the end of the hour, 877-217-5757. Producer Robin Dow will take your call. You can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And we have with us Troy Hebert, former state lawmaker who is a supporter of Governor Landry, and Jan Moeller, who's covered a few governors for the Picayune, and now for the last 4 years, head of the budget project, the Louisiana Budget Project, which has a new moniker, Invest in Louisiana. Again, 877-217-5757. Please be brief in your remarks. Dana in New Orleans. Dana, good morning. You are on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I'm listening, and we're talking about how we're investing in all these corporations and giving them their money. And I think a lot of this is playing out in the Topgolf situation that the Lower Garden District is dealing with right now, where we had a proposal that was approved by the neighborhood to have more affordable housing and a community area down in the Lower Garden District. And then as they went through the process, it got turned into a Topgolf, which is not beneficial to us at all. And it takes away all of the jobs that they have promised us, the community space, and the affordable housing.
Thank you, Dana. Jan, I'm not familiar with that particular situation, but you can hear the concern in her voice.
I have not been tracking that very closely. I've read some of the stories, but certainly I understand the need for affordable housing. You know, we do have housing, you know, whether it's home prices or rent has gone up faster than incomes in recent years. Certainly since the start of the pandemic, they've leveled off a little bit. We see more unhoused people on the street than we used to. And the answer to homelessness is more housing. So certainly we need to build more housing, more affordable housing. Again, I'm not terribly familiar with the details of this project that's going on, but I know it's a big concern to a lot of folks in New Orleans.
Garrett in Baton Rouge, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Garrett.
Yes, well, I wanted to make a statement about the tax credit for schools, for families, but I just totally disagree that the solution to homelessness is more homes. I mean, I don't think you could make a more incredibly false statement. I mean, we know you can't just build a home and put a homeless person in it and say that the problem's solved. But and I think that that's just self-evidently obvious.
Is that what you were saying, John?
I think we need to build more housing that people can afford to live in.
There you go. Troy, you have some thoughts on this?
Well, let me just say this. I know we're running out of time, and you know, Governor Landry is being accused of doing too much too fast, and the points that your callers are talking about is an example. You know, talking about houses, when your house is on fire and it's a five-alarm fire, you don't show up with a wheelbarrow and a five-gallon bucket of water. You need to throw everything you got at it. I think Governor Landry has recognized jobs, crime, and education as the three-prong approach on the three-legged stool in order to make Louisiana better. And so what he's doing is he's doing everything he can. And I can tell you, the people that are surprised, they shouldn't be, Jim, because it wasn't false advertising with Jeff Landry. He said during the campaign exactly the things he wanted to do, and he sure ain't wasting any time doing it. And I think that we need to recognize that we don't have time to waste.
Patrick in Baton Rouge. Patrick, you're on with Jan and Troy. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, there's plenty of people building affordable housing. The problem is we've got moratoriums that don't let people build stuff. And then as far as industry, a lot of people came to Baton Rouge in the 70s and the 80s because of our industry, my family included. What about minimum wage, though? Should we abolish it? It shouldn't even be an issue.
All right. You gave a lot of perspectives there. I think we've covered the minimum wage enough, and there are some conservatives like Orrin Scott who believes no minimum wage. But as far as how Louisiana was growing in the 70s, yeah, we were growing big time. And then in the 80s, the oil boom became a bust, and we quit growing, and we haven't grown since. So something, as General Honore said, Troy, we've got the third largest energy producer in the country, and we've got the second worst economy as far as the stability of our citizens, their net worth, and their quality of life. We do have a lower cost of living, I'll grant that, but we do have some areas for improvement. I think that's a given, isn't it?
Well, let's talk about the energy part. The energy part, these energy companies obviously are a tremendous asset to Louisiana, and they provide a lot of good jobs. But we have to remember, too, though, that not only does drilling equal jobs, as Governor Landry points out, but drilling also equals cheaper gas. Cheaper gas means cheaper food. Cheaper gas means cheaper supplies, cheaper goods. And so if you look at what's driving inflation, one of the factors, I know there's many, is the high cost of fuel. So we need to do our part, and Louisiana's blessed with so many natural resources when it comes to get oil and gas. But we need to do more about oil and gas, not just for jobs. We need to drive to where people can afford to put gas into that tank.
All right.
So there's a lot more to it.
All right. But we are drilling quite a bit, by the way, despite the claims to the contrary. But Jan, you have the floor, my friend.
Well, let's talk about industry, because I think everybody supports industry. I had the privilege to spend 8 years on the Board of Commerce and Industry under the previous governor, and I saw a lot of these big petrochemical projects that came in. And the problem with industry in Louisiana is that it just takes fewer and fewer workers to run these factories. So even when we get an investment of, say, $1 billion or more, there'll be a lot of construction jobs that come with that business. But once the plant is up and running, very often there's not a whole lot of jobs. And a lot of times we give tax incentives, and we're going to be giving tax incentives now to corporations that make investments that end up killing jobs. So you know, I grew up in Pittsburgh when the steel mills were dying. Those steel mills would have 5,000 people working in them. We get some of these huge petrochemical companies, and there might be 100 permanent jobs.
Well, and Pittsburgh has come back rather nicely in recent vintage.
And it hasn't been the steel mills that brought them back.
Well,
investments in people and modern technology.
They wanted to do it another way, yeah. David in Atlanta. David, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Hebert, you forgot to mention red states like Louisiana and Florida. People are fleeing en masse. One reason is skyrocketing insurance rates, casualty and flood insurance. Right now in Africa, there's a massive heat wave sweeping parts of Africa. The oceans are at all-time record high temperatures. The Republicans in Washington want to repeal President Biden's green energy program. Governor Landry won't even recognize human-caused climate change.
All right. Well, what about our environment, which contributes to these high insurance rates? And David says we're not doing enough to address it, but there is a flurry of legislation at the Capitol relating to insurance reform that tilts toward industry. Troy Hebert, the insurance commissioner, Tim Temples, made a persuasive case that that's the only way we're going to get people in this state to do business. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't agree with everything the caller said, but I agree with his overall point that we done ticked off Mother Nature, and we're in a fight with her right now, and I don't see how we win it. And as far as for insurance premiums are based on insurance claims. And the more detrimental our weather and severe our weather systems get, then the more claims you're going to have, which obviously raises your premiums. So that's a tough battle. I don't know the answer to that. I can't sit here and tell you I have all those answers, but I do agree that, you know, Mother Nature, I don't know how we beat that fight, and she's certainly not happy with us.
I don't know if I can add anything to what Troy just said. I agree. I mean, I'm not the expert on insurance regulation, but certainly the reason premiums are going up is because Louisiana is a riskier place to live thanks to the more frequent natural disasters that are being caused by man-made climate change.
Well, tonight at the American Legion Hall in Baton Rouge, some journalists, mostly former journalists, but they'll be skewering politicians, and Jan Moeller has been in the Gridiron Show a time. It's 7:45 if you'd like to attend. There are tickets available, I'm sure. But
doors at 6:30.
Yeah, there you go. You know the drill. But you played Bobby Jindal at one point.
I played Bobby Jindal at one point. I had a lot of fun in the Gridiron Show. Then I had kids, so I've taken some years off. I'll hopefully be back one of these years. But if you haven't been to the Gridiron Show, or if you haven't gotten your tickets, I would urge you to do so. It's going to be a great show. A lot of, because I'm not in it, it'll be funnier than it otherwise would be.
No, it will be. Tracy.
Jan, if you keep moving up, Bobby Jindal's going to be playing you one day.
Tracy at the Capitol asks about this bill seeking to turn Spanish Town into a legislature-run state capital complex. It's a bill from Mike Eccles of Monroe. Jan, you used to live there, didn't you? What about
I've never lived in Spanish Town. Okay. I've spent a lot of time over there. So I read that in the paper like everybody else. I did used to live in D.C., as a resident of the District of Columbia, it always irked me that people who were elected from far away had a say in local affairs. And if I lived in Spanish Town, I think I would have the same feeling.
Let's see where this one goes. Sean in Baton Rouge, you'll be our final caller. Please be brief for Troy and Jan. Hi, Sean. Sean, we lost Sean. Another listener asked about the motorcycle helmet. No mandatory helmets that passed the House 60-43. We're going back to the Mike Foster days. And unlike Foster, this one may make it all the way. What do you think about that, Jan Moeller?
That's another one I haven't been tracking, but I will say this. You're going into the Hall of Fame my late friend Ed Anderson used to feel very strongly about that, used to love writing about those bills, and so, I'll be thinking of him.
Well, thank you. Jan Mohler. Thank you, Troy Hebert. Let's do it again soon. And we're back Monday. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.